Hello? Welcome to Wanda's Picks, a Black arts and culture program of the African Sisters Media Network. And we were hearing just a little bit of the soundtrack for Voluspa. Good morning, Chrissy. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I know you didn't know that I had brought you into the studio. Just wanted to play a little bit of that song to sort of entice our audience to come out this evening and maybe even come out the next day and just hang out through the 21st at this wonderful ritual that you have pulled together once again,
yeah.
A Ghost Dance for 2012. We're speaking with Chrissy Kiefer, who is the founder of what she writes, a witty, provocative dance company, Dance Brigade, and they're going to be debuting Voluspa, a Ghost Dance for 2012, which is a celebration of the end of the Mayan calendar and the beginning of a new age. So welcome to the studio. Yeah, so tell us about this work that is opening tonight, and then you're going to have, it's just continuing.
Right. Well, this show is Voluspa, Ghost Dance for 2012, and it is a gathering of different artists from different traditions that are focusing on the concepts of prophecy and destruction and renewal as the basic themes of the program. And there's significant video woven throughout that sort of explains the Mayan calendar and why we're all pretty much focused on this right now over the next couple of days. I've always been kind of a Mayan calendar aficionado. I got really wrapped up into it about 20 years ago and was always calculating, how old am I going to be when the world ends? How old am I going to be? So here we are, on the threshold of this kind of amazing moment in time, and time was really what was so important to the Mayans. And so, everybody has their different ideas of what's happening, and so instead of just like saying I knew what was going to happen, because I don't, I just curated a program from different artists and different perspectives about what was happening in these times, and these times in general, just like even all the way from what happened in Connecticut to what's going on with global warming to, what's going on with poverty and, all the different things that are up for all of us right now, spiritual transformation.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And then you've invited lots of collaborating artists, and Carolyn, is that you?
It is. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Carolyn.
Good morning.
How are you? It's Carolyn Brandy.
Hi, Chrissy. Hi, Wanda.
Hi, Carolyn. Good morning.
Well, I'm really looking forward to tonight and tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very excited about the show. It's going to be wonderful. I'm so glad that we're gathering together for this particular winter solstice, because it's there's so much leading up to it, like you said, Chrissy, all the prophecies and the Mayans, and the Mayan was a great culture. It was one of the great cultures in our world history, and they were really great astronomers and astrologists and mathematicians, and a lot of this information is coming out about how they were able to track cycles, of 5,000 years, 6,000 years, 7,000 years, and all the technology that they had, that they discovered, it's quite amazing. So I'm really, really looking forward to the program tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Carolyn, you are, as a drummer, that started the Women's Drummers International and the co-creator of Born to Drum Women's Drum Camp, and founder of the Bay Area's favorite marching band, Sister Boom, way back in 1981, and co-founded the popular band Alive, and you lead trips to Cuba, and you know, you're sort of like a real spiritual person, so you're going to be a part of the In Transformational Healing Circle with Vicki Noble. Tell us what that's going to entail.
Vicki and I have been doing these healing circles. Well, actually, Vicki started it, and I came on to do the drumming for her.
Mm-hmm.
It's really wonderful. It's a hands-on healing. We have drumming that's going nonstop. Usually it's for about an hour. Tonight it'll be from 10 to 11, and tomorrow night we're going to bring in the solstice, so we're going to go till 12:30, I think it is, where you can either, you know, participate by shaking a rattle or playing a drum or moving, or you can actually lay on the floor and have a hands-on healing. There's mats that are put down on the floor, and it's kind of a, you know, like a magnetic kind of thing. There's somebody who's holding your head and somebody on your feet, and, you know, just letting that energy go through your body, you know, it's polarizing. So Vicki can explain it really well. It's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
It really is wonderful.
Right, yeah. And now we're also joined in the studio by Mama Koito. I always, like, kill her name. You'll have to correct it for our audience. did I do it almost correctly? Or Mama, how do you say your name?
You say Mama Koit.
Mama Koit, okay.
Mama Koit, yes.
Mama Koit, okay.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, and you are joining us, and you've been on the show before, and you describe yourself as a barrio songstress, poet, performance artist, and spiritual healer who comes from the Yaqui people of the Sonora Desert, and you're based in the Mission District, right around Mission, Dance Mission, which is where Valuspa is going to be happening. It's actually going to be happening at, let me get the address, 3316 24th Street in San Francisco. And the program starts with 7:30 tonight, Wednesday, December 19th, and 7:30 December 20th, and December 20th goes into, as Carolyn mentioned, into the next day, into the solstice. And Mama Koit, she started in 2006. She brought International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women and Girls to San Francisco after performances in Mexico and Peru. So, Mama, tell us, you know, sort of what you bring to this celebration of the new beginning this next couple of days, tonight and tomorrow and Friday.
Mm-hmm. I am very, very pleased to be included in this lineup. I find that it's the one multicultural event that really takes a look at these cosmic events taking place from the Rainbow Tribe perspective. So I'm very happy to be included. I bring in the Mayan prayer, as I'm a student of the Mayan Spiritual Guide Association that is based here in the Bay Area with Don Pascual Gachon. We've been holding ceremonies all year, 20 ceremonies to teach people the meaning of time. And the last ceremony took place last Saturday the 15th as my elders left for Central America to tend to the sacred ancestral altars over there. So we're here in the corner of 24th and Mission. And rather than going anywhere to observe this galactic alignment, we're going to stay in our corner and we're going to receive the new day from there, from where, you know, we inhabit. And it's going to be a beautiful thing. I understand that the alignment takes place at 3 o'clock in the morning on Thursday night, and the prophecy, if for lack of a better word, of Moctezuma, the last Tlatoani of the Mexican people, states that one day our sun will shine on us again, and that day is Friday morning. So to see the sunrise on that day is a beautiful thing. It's the culmination of the dream of the ancestors. And I believe that this Wolf Spa performance ritual gathering really is designed to welcome the new day, to atone for our lack of understanding, and to be present to the, you know, the alignment of the umbilicus of the planets, the umbilicus of the sun, in alignment with the eye of the Milky Way, the galaxy. So very, very important cosmic moments and time for everybody to be present in their heart, you know, with their eyes, with their spirit, with their heart. So it's going to be so beautiful. I really want everybody to come and be present. There is going to be nothing like it in the city. So it is a cosmic appointment that we have with art, with music, with spirituality, and with our rainbow tribe.
Mm. That's great. Well said.
Yeah. So Chrissy, tell us, you know, sort of what you choreographed for this a special time in human the human cycle for those of us who are still at this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, really, I actually gathered. I'm more the producer of this. I did choreograph a new piece called Bola Spa, which is the three fates who can see the into the past, the present, and the future, and they start off the dance brigade section, and that music that you were playing at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Was the music that we used for the piece. They are actually sitting on like a bench and looking at the string, and they start to vision and start to see things. What's sort of interesting about, you know, to bring it into a more contemporary time frame is that I have video of chemtrails going on behind them, because I sit in Dance Mission. I know a lot of people don't know what chemtrails are or talk about chemtrails, but we sit at the in our office at Dance Mission, and we have a bird's eye view over the mission and into the sky, and we see airplanes flying back and forth all the time, disseminating white, thick clouds of I don't know, there's all kinds of ideas about what it is, aluminum and all kinds of things, and they're spraying mm-hmm. all over us in the mission, and you watch them crisscross the sky, and then pretty soon the sky turns completely kind of white in this very bizarre kind of way, and it looks very reflective and pretty heartbreaking. We all just sit in the windows, and we just watch this thing go down, and then right, they did it for like 5 days, and then it rained for 5 days. So we, you know, I don't think we know. A lot of people can project what's happening. But anyway, I put that in just as a way to, you know, as just a way of collective consciousness, because I know some of our audience is very upset about what's going on with that. So that's one thing that's happening. The Dance Brigade is just doing a composite of material that has prophecy woven without it. We talk about violence against women. There's video. We show part of the video of 1 Billion Rising in our piece, along with the taiko drumming, which is very powerful. You know that this whole thing about violence against women is coming up during this very critical time. And we have two pre-Columbian dance companies that are coming, starting the ritual outdoors and bringing it into Dance Mission. There's a dance company called Naka Dance Theater, which is doing something about the polar bears and the Alaska and what's going on in the north with the melting of the ice caps, which seems very pivotal to what's happening on the entire planet. And then we have many other dance groups and performers weaving in and out. Carolyn's playing for Susana Arenas' group from Cuba. She's playing drums for that, and they're doing a thing on Yamaya and the water and the oceans. And so it's all very tied in, and it's very tied into the earth. And the video that we're showing about the Mayan culture, is they're talking about the earth and what's happening with the earth. And that, and to them, that is their prophecy, that the earth is shaking because of its because of the destruction that we have wrought upon it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. are any of these, I mean, I noticed that some of the artists that are a part of, you know, either Program 1 or Program 2 are artists that have performed, you know, as a part of Dance Brigade's programming in the past. Like, you know, you have Girl Brigade on both evenings, but the evenings don't necessarily, everyone who performs tonight doesn't necessarily perform in program two tomorrow. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit. I was interested in the dances from Imperial Silence. That looked really interesting. A dead opera in four acts. Yeah.
Well, you know, the Dance of Imperial Silences are based on Mexican folk dancing, but also on contemporary video created by John Leaños. And he has some very, very edgy and very funny. Sylvia was in the, you know, watching me. That was the one on Katrina, you know, dead Katrina, telling what the, you know, the different temperatures that were happening, going from minus zero to 285. And so he's got this kind of phenomenal video that weaves in and out of his work. And the dancers do this kind of mix of very contemporary folk dancing, very well executed, but very hard style, in a very intense kind of, I don't know what the word is, in a broader sense of in Day of the Dead face paint. So that's what they're bringing to the show. Maybe, Mama Qual, you could say a little bit more about what they do, because I think you're more familiar with them than I am, actually.
The Maya, in regards to the what's happening right now in the times?
Yeah, I was saying, no, with, you know, with Imperial Silence, John Leaños' work. Have you seen them before?
I have seen them before, not this particular piece, but I do find the work that they do very powerful. And, of course, all of these dances are based on ancestral dances that have to do with how we connect to the earth, how we stomp our feet on the earth, how we align with the cosmos. Everything is about aligning our belly button, believe it or not, with the umbilicus of life, the origin and the tree of life. And so I find that his dance is not only spectacular to behold, but also quite transformative. The way that these people do their work is designed to transform the energy around them, the energy of the space. It's a prayer in motion. So these things are quite important, not only to consume, right, not only to be there as a show, but to participate in them, to breathe the same air that the performer is breathing and transforming in this space. So I'm quite excited about this evening. I'm going to be sharing my prayers and the information about the day. For instance, today is the day 2 Tihash, and Tihash would be like the obsidian knife. Today, in this opening night, what I'm going to do is I'm going to lead people into cutting through the bonds of the past, cutting through all of this that ties us to a past in which we participate in the pollution of life, in the assassination of life. And so these days, like I said, are very, very important that we find ourselves together, doing this ritual together, and may the new day find us together, no?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So well said.
That's
thank
what
you
I
so
like
much.
About it too, that we're going to be sharing this momentous time together, you know, offering ritual and offering our art and offering our healing to each other, you know, in this circle of life. I'm really excited about it. I'm so happy that we're doing it, and I thank you, Chrissy, for being such a seer, you know, such an incredible person who sees these things and brings people together in the powerful way that you do.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah,
well, it's wonderful to be in the Bay Area where you can actually gather so many people together who are so, you know, articulate and forward-thinking in their vision and what they see happening, and just to be on the program with both of you. And, you know, I realize I think I'm doing one thing, and then you think what we're all doing together, and then Carolyn thinks what we're doing together, and then it all becomes a much bigger and deeper concept, you know,
exactly,
as to what we are doing. So that's the power of collectivity, which the Mayans
talk
about a lot.
And the power
of
women
too.
Working together.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Is the power of working together as women, because when women get together in a good way, everybody becomes an expert in their field. And what we generate together is really mastery of the energy. No, when we don't waste our energy trying to assert who's first and who's next and who's last, then really what happens, what ensues, is beautiful, and it's beauty and it's power. So I'm really, really happy to be in this lineup and preparing my piece for you all tonight.
And, of course, the audience is so important in that collective effort, too, because without everybody, every single person is important in that, you know, in the field there. Everybody who comes and participates tonight is important, you know, in that energetic field. So I hope a lot of people come. And
yes, I hope so too. And also, just on top of what you're saying is that the performance will actually be in the round, in a semicircle, all the way around the theater. So it feels so we're participating in a more of a ritual kind of feeling with the performance. So if you sit on the, you know, we'll have people in the bleachers, but we'll also have people in the sides. And if you're sitting on the sides, you'll actually see the dances and the performers from a whole different perspective. Which, you know, sometimes you get kind of nervous. Oh, you're not seeing me from the front, but actually seeing something happen. To see inside the piece and to feel like you're in the piece is actually sometimes much more powerful. And, you know, the original work of Wallflower Order was born out of working in the round at the Wow Hall in Eugene, Oregon. So we have in a big space on a big floor, and everybody just sat, and sometimes our shows would be so packed people were sitting behind us. And it was about the feeling. It was the group consciousness that we were creating. It was like more like a rodeo than a dance concert, one of the reviewers wrote, you know, in the very, very earlier years, and it was.
I love it.
So we're trying to create a spiritual rodeo tonight of, you know, calling in everyone to join in with us and, you know, really be part of and transform the space and transform the energy on our planet.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah. I was wondering, Chrissy, if you created over 10 full-length concerts of contemporary dance theater, including Pandora's Box, Ballet of the Banshees, Cinderella, Queen of Sheba, Cavewoman Spell, The Revolutionary Nutcracker Sweetie, and The Great Liberation Upon Hearing. And I was wondering, just over your creative life as a dancer and visionary, and you mentioned that you've been really sort of following, you know, the Mayan calendar, you know, for a couple of decades. I was wondering sort of what were you thinking about, you know, sort of the artistic thinking around the collaborations that you called for, you know, for this program, you know, part one and part two, sort of how it came together for you. And then Mama and Carolyn, I was just wondering, in your careers, which are pretty expansive, you know, sort of what prepared you for this particular moment, and have you had any moments like this? 500 years for the calendar, probably not. But anyway.
Somebody else. Sylvia, why don't you go first? I don't need to go. Go ahead.
Well, my name is Sylvia Mama Coes. And I have been doing a lot of work to prepare for this night, actually. This is a night that we've been waiting for 13 baktuns, 13 periods of 400 years. My people and I have been really expectant of it. It's a beautiful thing because it marks the beginning of a new era, a new thought, a new idea, and the resurgence then of the ancient cultures that have been squashed by the European mindset. And so for me, it has become a ritual of ceremony, constant ceremony. Like I said, during 2012, I've been attending these Mayan ceremonies every 20 days, and there were 20 ceremonies because the concept of time is 20 moments of creation multiplied by 13 levels of energy gives you 260 days, which is the period of human gestation, human evolution. So in order for us to understand what time is, we cannot find it in the clock, we cannot find it in the Gregorian calendar, we cannot find it in anthropology or any written books. You have got to experience it with your entire body in a sacred ceremony with the eloquence all the people, all the spiritual guides, and also with the blessing of the ancestors. And what we do for those ceremonies is we pay with eloquence, with copal, with flowers, with chocolates, with beautiful, beautiful offerings to the sacred fire in the name of our ancestors for all of the times that we have not been there, for all of the times that we have forgotten our elders, for all of the times in which we have forgotten our commitment to the earth in order to be comfortable, in order to make money, in order to have a house with the infrastructure that is completely polluting of the earth. And so for me, it's been a preparation of many years, maybe 14 years, to come to this place in which I can say, I am here, I am ready in the name of all of my neighborhood, my family, my ancestors, my tribe. I am here as a granddaughter, you know, to ask for the blessing of the ancestors, to ask also for the alignment. May our minds and hearts be clear enough to receive this new day in a good way. And I also want to say, because this alignment is so powerful, the powers that be want to distract you from this moment and want to put your mind in, you know, the genocide of people, in the killing of children, because this is a very old method of capturing our consciousness, the sacrifice of children. This is not new. This happens a lot, and it has been happening throughout history, throughout the history of patriarchy, from Abraham on. And so it's very important for us to forget for a minute all of our programming, all of our indoctrination, and to feel the human heart, to feel our existence, to feel the threat of life, to feel, you know, our commitment to our descendants, our seventh generation, as my elders say. You know, what kind of planet are we leaving for them? How are we leading our children, you know, to face all of the dangers that come from the enemies of life? So this alignment is designed for us to receive the new energy from the sun. And this is, Lucrecia, why I think these people are spraying us, because they don't want us to receive the rays of the sun. The sun is renovating itself. And everything that has to do with Mayan time is not prophetic, because my ancestors were scientific. So they counted time. The chronological system is the most sophisticated chronological system ever devised by the human mind. And so everything is accounted for, but you cannot read about it. You cannot think that you know from an anthropology perspective, because all of that, it comes from the Judeo-Christian mind, and it's a different method, no? Entonces, for me, it's such an important moment, and I am so thrilled and so happy and honored that to be in this mix, because it tells me that this is where I belong. This is where, you know, this alignment caught me right in the corner of 24th and Mission. And from that corner, we're going to beam out, you know, the energy of our heart and the wisdom of our vulvas and the eloquence, you know, of our words, in order to continue to transform, you know, our spaces from where we are. And you know what I'm going to do is the correct alignment takes place at 3 o'clock in the morning, I said, Thursday night, and the new dawn is on Friday morning. And so after that show, I'm going to come to the roof of my house and just contemplate and be there. Beautiful. If we cannot be in Central America tending the altars of the earth, we have to be where we are. And we have got to allow the sky and the stars and the moon to see us as well. Mm. Not only us through the window, but allowing the celestial bodies to take a look at us and introduce ourselves, you know. So what a great moment, y'all.
Beautiful. How beautifully you spoke that.
Wow.
That was beautiful what you said. I love that.
Yeah, it was very beautiful.
Truth, my friend.
Really.
How wonderful to be in the company of strong-minded women who still remember that we are beyond feminism, beyond any kind of philosophy and ideology, that we are alive and our commitment is with life and with our daughters, you know, with our children. I want to imagine the life, the new life for my great-grandchildren, no? And and so I take care of myself and I take care of my daughter. In the name of my grandchildren, I say, you got to eat well, child. So it's a big commitment, and the threat of life must continue. And, you know, we have to unplug ourselves from all of these distractions, because this violence increases just to turn us away from what is beauty, from the new day, to keep us plugged into fear and frustration and rage and impotence, no? And like Alma says, you know, forget about your inability to illuminate the world. Light your candle and step forward with no fear. That is my inspiration, you know, to continue because it doesn't matter who you are, how poor you are. It doesn't matter how much you don't have. What matters is what's in your heart and your ability then to sing your song, to say your prayer, no matter what.
Beautiful.
Yes, we'll let our audience know again that we're speaking to Mama Colt, and that's who you just heard speaking, Carolyn Brandy and Chrissy Kiefer, about Valuspa, a ghost dance for 2012. And Chrissy, I just noticed that the title of the program is based on a poem.
Yes, we started thinking, I mean, I've been harboring this idea in my head to do this show for a long time, and I had hip surgery, and when I was recovering from hip surgery, which, you know, if you've ever had anesthesia, they kill you and bring you back to life. And so that was the hardest thing about it for me, was not having a brain that functioned. My leg came together really fast, but there were some synapses missing in my brain. And finally, when they all fired in one morning, I had this idea to do the ghost dance, which I was also really familiar with, because I had studied it over the years, and my daughter had done a paper on it in school. And I track Native American culture too, because I'm born in the United States, and I am of those people, I feel. And so, and I'm, you know, as much as I agree with Sylvia, Mama Quat, on all that she's, you know, everything that she said about the Mayan culture. You know, I'm not Mayan. I can only kind of worship the culture from afar. And when we were trying to investigate in the office, like which path to take on this, there were so many contradictory paths about ideas about what was going to happen at 2012, and not being really hooked up, I couldn't quite grasp one trajectory. So I decided to go at it from the point of view of the Voluspa prophecy, which is just about the end of the world and regeneration. It's the vulva, the woman prophetess speaking the truth as she sees it around the destruction of the world and then the eventual rebirth. So, and we were all vulvas in the office, and I thought, well, we can definitely take it. We can definitely do it from the point of view of the vulva, the woman who speaks the truth. So that was the idea that I was able to track the most. Mm-hmm. And then as I was putting the whole program together, I found this fabulous video called The Mayan Word, where the contemporary Mayan culture was really brought to light through this video. So I've woven a lot of that into the program to actually, you know, give some education to the situation that's happening in the Mayan territory right now. And because I think a lot of people have no idea what's going on. A lot of people, I don't think, have any idea what's going on in a lot of parts of the world other than, you know, our own. So I just decided to make it about lots of different cultures saying what was happening right now for them, and then hoping that what Mama Quaddle did and the pre-Columbian groups in the video would actually really be able to bring to light what the Mayans are thinking about this time as well.
Mm-hmm. Could you share the poem with our audience?
No, I cannot.
Oh, okay. Well,
I don't have it on. I'm at home in my living room.
Well, I have part of it from the flyer. It says, thence come maidens who know much, three from that hall beneath the tree. They established law. They selected lives for the children of ages and the fates of men.
Yeah.
So that's from the poem. Yeah. Well, my next guest is in the studio, and he's going to be talking about another play that's looking at this renewal, this new beginning, Night Wakes Dawn. It's a musical that's being produced by Loco Bloco, and so it's going to be on Saturday. And so, Carolyn, you didn't get a chance to respond to the question. Did you have anything you wanted to say?
I just feel grateful every day, you know. I feel grateful, and I'm so happy Mama Quatel that you talked about, you know, the light overcoming this destructive mindset that we're distracted by, like you, how you put it, it's just everywhere. And so I think, you know, I'm sitting here in my living room and I'm looking out the window and it's so brilliantly light, that blessed light, you know, I'm so grateful. I'm grateful every day. Every day is the moment that we live in, you know, and so I feel really, every day I go out and I thank Creator, you know, for this blessed day. And I'm so looking forward to the program because I'm looking forward to that community, being in community with everybody that's going to be in that room and outside on the streets and just moving through that perspective of, you know, bringing some light and understanding to who we really are, who we really are. We're not the TV set. You know, we're not all that awful news. We're not the drones. We're not, but who we really are, you know. And so I really look forward to that renewal. I don't think that it's, the world is going to end, but I do think that we have the opportunity for a new beginning, you know. So I'm really, really, really happy we're doing this, and thank everybody who's involved. And thank you, Wanda, for your beautiful program of allowing all of us to come on and speak and talk about what we're doing with our lives, and just grateful to everybody.
Oh, thank you,
Marilyn. Can we just give the time and dates one more time and a phone number for people?
Certainly.
Tonight and tomorrow night, the 19th and the 20th of December at 3316 24th Street at Mission. If you're interested in getting tickets, they're at brownpapertickets.com, and you can type in either Dance Brigade or Vola Spa, and the performance ritual starts at 7:30.
Right, so, and then you can also visit dancemission.com, or you can call 415-826-4441. And then with regards to Brown Paper Tickets, they also have a phone number. It's 1-800-838-3006, and tickets range from $12 to $20. So it should be really wonderful. Well, thank you all so much for joining us, and look forward to seeing you this evening.
Thank you.
Yes.
Sure. Peace and love. Bye-bye. Good morning, Akil. How are you?
I'm all right. Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Oh, thanks for hanging in there. Akil, how do you pronounce your last name?
Mistair.
Mistair. He is the assistant director of music for this really exciting play that's going to be having its debut, Night Wakes Dawn, La Noche Desperta.
Desperta.
Keep on going.
Yeah, Noche Despierta el Manecer or something, I think. I don't have the paper right now.
Amanecer?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's connecting to ancient wisdom to guide us through our endings and beginnings in 2012. And this program that's being produced by Loco Bloco and Brava, and you've been with Loco Bloco, Annie said, since you were one? It's like,
No.
Oh, no?
Not since I was one.
First grade.
Yeah, so first grade.
So you were six.
Yeah.
So that's not much bigger. Not much bigger. But that's a long time, because if you're 17 now, you're like a master, because that's 11 years, right?
I don't know if I'm a master, but definitely I think I've put in a lot of time, and I'm grateful for Loco Bloco, and I'm happy to be a part of this show. It's going to be.
Yeah. Tell us about Night Wakes Dawn. And I was reading a bit about it, and it looks like it's a great story that of some work that you all have done, that you've expanded into, make it into an evening length theatrical performance that has music and dance in it.
Yes. Well. We got the theme name from our carnival theme, or we got the title, Night Wakes Dawn, which was our theme for carnival. And we kind of, you know, after carnival, people were thinking about what's our next thing. And so we kind of took the idea and ran with it. And so my friend, he's actually like my best friend, Martin Herrera Pazmiño, and his sister, Alma Herrera Pazmiño, they wrote the play. I think, you know, I don't want to give away the story too much, but what I think it's really about is new beginnings and how this calendar ending of the cycle is bringing about change for everyone, you know, and everyone is a part of someone else's change, which is very, I think it's very, very cool how you see it. It takes place kind of in the street, and that's how it's supposed to be, like in the street on the night of going into the next morning, and how there's all these things going on and people's lives are changed dramatically for the good and for the bad, and it's very cool. But you know, life keeps moving on and people continue to grow and continue to find themselves, which is very cool.
So you mean like moving from like December 20th into December 21st, that kind of night into morning, like the literal?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting. And you are a senior presently at the School of the Arts High School in San Francisco, and you study percussion there. And so for this particular production, you're a part of a local youth apprentice program, and you're a performer in the performing ensemble, and you are the assistant musical director for this play. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what that means as writing the music for this. And I want to share with our audience something from the press release. It says that you mentioned that Alma and Martin Herrera Pazmiño, they tell the story of a brother and a sister's educational journeys and how these larger spiritual beliefs and energies are reflected in the lives of families living in the Mission District today. So it takes place, as you mentioned, the night of December 21st, and the story represents three major stages of the night: nightfall, midnight, and dawn, which are each presented by the three music dance compositions developed, as you mentioned already, for Carnival 2012. Bachata, reggaeton, two is R&B experimental, and then three is samba and house. So if you could talk about, you know, sort of the complexity of, you know, being the one who is responsible for the music for these different sections of the drama.
Yeah. Well, it could have been a lot harder if we hadn't already had an idea from Carnival.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily we did, and we kind of had like a skeleton to work with. And so, what should I just talk about the process of what we did, or?
As much as you
want to
tell me, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was cool to be a part of this because I had never created music to a script, and it was really, really cool because I felt like there was a great deal of like communication between the theater aspect and the music, and so like for the middle sequence, it's all about like a dream and the midnight and the kind of, you know, you don't know what's going on when you're sleeping idea. And for that, we incorporated like ancient rhythm type things to, you know, more like old rhythms of like old Mayan rhythms and old Aztec rhythms. And then we modernized it with you know, adding horns, and we have like weird synthesizer noises, you know,
mm-hmm.
over it. And I think that piece is one of my favorite pieces because it shows, it has roots in old things, in ancient things and ancient like wisdom. just like this play, you know, it's inspired by the calendar, but then also has a modern twist and modern edge. And so, you know, obviously the calendar is thousands of years old, but people are experiencing it now. And I just thought it was really cool to see parallels in the play and in our creation process of kind of like things changing and this constant cycle of change and stuff. Pretty, I don't know, interesting to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I really enjoy Loco Bloco, you know, all the young people playing these really big drums, and it's just, you just really have a presence. I just love it when you show up at protests. It just really lifts spirits. Yeah, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how Night Wakes Dawn is sort of just a part of the type of stuff that Loco Bloco does, you know, as a company, as an organization. Could you tell us a little bit about Loco Bloco, its history? Because I, more recently, there was a play, Paul Flores had a play, and it was really great. It was about gangs and gangs that were rooted in like Central America and came up through, you know, Los Angeles to the Bay Area, and this father who was trying to leave all that behind for his son, and he was removing his tattoos or placas. And at one of the community forums, Loco Bloco was there talking about art for social change and sort of the healing properties of art and how one can use art.
The one who spoke, on the panel.
Yeah, so I want you to talk about that, too, as something. I didn't know that you all did that, too, prior to, you know, seeing you in that program. Luis Rodriguez was here. You know, he's done a whole lot of work. He's really well known for his writing and his poetry and his activism. Talk about your organization and how Night Wakes Dawn is sort of indicative of what you all do.
Well, obviously we're like a drum and dance organization. That's our main thing, is making that happen. But I think it was started because people saw a need in the community of giving something for the youth to do. And it has always, I think, come from the point of view of trying to make a change in the community. And, like, making people aware that there's something else, something greater that they can be a part of. And for me, Loco Bloco definitely served that purpose when I was in middle school. I felt like I was lost, and I kind of had a lot of stuff going on, and Loco Bloco had always been there, and it served as an anchor for me. But besides the music and drumming and having classes, Loco Bloco, we haven't in the past few years, but we used to do a show every year at Dance Mission. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our shows had to do with what was going on politically at the time. So we had one show that was all about how McDonald's is killing our people and, you know, killing animals and treating them unfairly, and we had another one about, like, the current race politics. I don't know if you remember, well, not current, but of the times. And there was, like, a section in Kmart somewhere that, like, the racial sections. And so we did a whole skit about that, and then skits about
a section in Kmart that was
like, the Latino section.
Really?
And they had, like, different clothes and things, that they thought were Latino-esque, and then the black section, Asian section. And so when we found out about this, of course we were horrified, but then I think they also thought, wow, this is gold. Like, we're going to be able to write a bunch of stuff about this. And like you said, seeing us at protests, I think Loco Bloco is very active in the community and stuff like that. So this Night Wakes Dawn is just another... I think it's an extension of that, because it's not directly calling anybody out or anything like that, making these big, big, huge, like, political messages. But I think it's a commentary on how, I know Martin, the writer, he's telling me that, the whole story of it is inspired because of how much the hipsters are blowing it up in the Mission. And he lives right in the heart of the Mission on 22nd Street. Mm-hmm. And he says, like, he hears them talking about, like, oh, man, the world's going to end and all this stuff. And I think he wanted to write with his sister about how people not of the culture, you know, as outsiders are coming in and twisting what is actually there. Mm-hmm. And I think that the play is trying to help us regain sight of our culture and our roots, and remembering those who came before us, and how, you know, we don't have anything to fear, I think, with this change.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's very cool, very cool, very, I don't know. I think everyone should come see it. It's going to be a great production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You're going to have two shows, Saturday, December 22nd at 7, and Sunday, December 23rd at 2 at the Bravo Theater Center, 2781 24th Street at York in San Francisco. And tickets are $10 for students and $15 to $20 for youth. And group discounts are available. And I'm looking for contact information, and I don't seem to have printed page.
hey,
oh,
Wanda.
Is that you, Idris?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Director Idris.
Good morning,
Akil. Cool.
Good morning, Idris.
Oh, super, super. Yeah, so I was just looking.
Bravo.org.
Oh, Bravo.org. Okay, cool.
Yeah,
thank
Bravo.org,
so
and go to our current page.
Hello? Can't hear you. Hello? Idris. Okay. Hello, Idris. You've dropped off. Idris? Well, she'll call us back. All right. So, Akil, talk a little bit about what you talked about at the community forum as a part of PLACAS when it was having its Bay Area debut. Maybe a few months ago now.
So the whole board or the forum was about how community-based organizations help heal community members and can serve as like a healing tool for them. And, you know, a lot of these guys and women, girls and guys, they were talking about some real heavy stuff about things, I don't know, things that I had never experienced. But for me, my parents were going back and forth. They're separated, and they were. It was a hard time for me being caught in the middle. And it felt like the only stable thing I had was going to my class every twice a week with Loco Bloco. And Loco Bloco just served as a home away from home, because everyone, you know, I could go there. I knew I could be safe there. I knew there were people there that loved me, that I loved, and that hear me if I needed to tell a problem or tell me a joke to make me smile. And I've always loved Loco Bloco for trying to make everyone feel like they're at home. And that's, I think, definitely, it's not written in our platform or whatever that we tell people, but it definitely is something that's very true for Loco Bloco.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, just it's great. It was great, and it still is great to have family there, people that I know I'm going to have a bond with for forever because of it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how did you find out about Loco Bloco? Did your parents introduce you to them, or were they in your school, after school program? How did you come? Because you were first grade, so some adult got you into it.
Yeah, my mom's friend worked at the Mission Beacon at Everett, where they were holding classes at the time. And my mom had always been involved in, like, community work. And so she had heard about them. And then her friend was working there, and she was like, well, you should bring Akil. He's like, I think you'd like it. And my mom was also looking for something for me to, like, find that's my thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That so, like, whatever it was, drawing or singing or whatever. And so she tried it out, and I really liked it. And yeah, so that's how I found out, just through the community, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So talk about a little bit about, you know, sort of this whole, the percussion aspect of a performance and your affinity with this type of musical expression. What is it that attracts you to percussion? I mean, drums and those type of instruments, you know, they're real basic to all cultures and you know, have a real spiritual tradition. And then we're, you know, talking about the new beginning. So, you know, that you are a percussionist, you know, that you are a drummer, that Loco Bloco is an ensemble of drummers and percussionists.
yeah.
Sort of, you know, lends itself really well to Night Wakes Dawn and the type of work that you're a part of. Oh, I think that's Idris again. Let me see.
All right.
Yeah, there you are, Idris. Let's let Akil answer the question, and then I want you to talk about directing this wonderful piece.
Okay, cool.
Well, I think, like you said, percussion is kind of like a basic thing in all cultures, and something about it, I just liked it. And now, as I got older, I was able to kind of more realize what it was, and it just feels good, you know, which is part of it, that it just, it's the only thing that makes me, when I'm in a rut, feel like I have something else. And also, like you said, it's very basic. And I mean, obviously, like, basic, everybody has it, but it's a basic instrument. And I like the the challenge, I guess, of having to push to do more. Because, you know, you can get maybe, like, out of the big bass drums that that we use for the main bateria, you can get, like, one or two tones, maybe. And so I like that it's so basic, so you need more people, and you create a community, and just by playing, you know. And for me, sharing the space while playing music with somebody is very sacred, you know. And the more people, then the bigger it is, and it becomes kind of this ceremonial thing where everyone is being together, and definitely is very spiritual. And I don't know, that just, I love the feeling. It's like, I'm like an addict, I guess you could say, because I want to always get that same first, like the same first high of, as, you know, being able to fully experience being a part of something that's completely bigger than me and bigger than anything else going on at the time, you know. And just being fully enveloped in that is very, it's very desirable for me. I just like that, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's wonderful. Thank you so much, Akil. Idris, one of our frequent.
Akil's the old soul.
Yeah.
That's
well,
what
you know,
drums
he's playing,
do to you.
Playing the drums, you know. I think
mm-hmm.
that's the instrument, that calling, you know, that he's like the ancestors sort of
mm-hmm.
channel themselves through that instrument
mm-hmm.
into the person who is playing it. That's why I'm sure that we have the blessed, you know, bata, and we have, you know, the ceremonies around drumming, because it's serious.
Mm-hmm.
You call the spirits in when you drum.
Mm-hmm.
Serious business.
Yeah.
So, Idris, you are, God, you're just so fantastic. You're an actress. You had a piece in Afro Solo, looking at some really wonderful aspects of one's person, and sort of using, going through the lens of what's happening in Nigeria, in Ogoniland, around the water and the oil and the land and the people.
Yeah, that's coming back too. I'm doing a mm-hmm. expansion of that in February at Brava.
Oh, excellent. And then, you know, you're an academic in recovery, you know, Iowa Workshop.
Okay. That's well said. I'm using that. That is so true. Exactly.
And then
you're
a Wolese and Yinka scholar.
Yeah, now I'm home.
Yeah. And then, you know, we last saw you as a dramaturge with Keith Joseph Atkins, his wonderful play about the black middle class.
Something
about Negroland. What was that play called?
Oh, God, which one? Oh, yeah, the Negroland.
The one about Negroland, yeah.
Negroville.
Negroville, yeah.
Yeah. Final days of Negroville.
Right, right. Yeah, I had Keith on talking about his science fiction series.
Wow, great.
Recently. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So now you are at Brava, and you are directing this wonderful work with these young people that have their written Night Wakes Down. Talk about that.
Well, you know, I said I'm home because the Mission, Brava, the Mime Troupe, and Loco Bloco are old colleagues of mine. I was, you know, I worked with Loco Bloco back when Tanya Mayo was back running Loco Bloco, which was in the 90s.
Oh, wow. You are family.
Yeah, and then Running Crew, which is the technical youth program behind the show. I should mention Running Crew also because Stacey Powers restarted Running Crew was one of the first things she did when she came to Brava. And I don't know if you remember Running Crew is the technical theater training program for youth 14 to 18. And they are designing the lights. They've done the set for the show, and they'll be running the show. We have a Running Crew stage manager. So, and I worked with Running Crew in the 90s also. So all of this is familiar territory to me, but also it's brand new because I've been out in the hinterlands. So I came home. I have instant family. It's beautiful. But I wanted to say this about the show, that for me, this is really huge. It's one of the hugest undertakings I think I've done. And I don't know professional theaters that dare to dream as big as Loco Bloco has for this production. In bringing three ensembles together, we rehearsed during the fall separately. So the music ensemble is run by Pete. I don't know Pete's full name. Oh, my God. Wait, I have the sheet here.
It's Pedro Gomez.
Yeah. Pedro Gomez and Juliana Blasi runs the dance ensemble, and then I was working with the theater ensemble, and we worked on the play. They worked on the music, and Giuliani and the dance company choreographed dances separately, and then a couple of weeks ago we brought them all together, and it was huge to think about, and it's even bigger to look at and envision. So it is, I think, very innovative in that way, and I love theatrical innovation. I love when people dream up something that no one's done before and that looks impossible and then works and sets out to achieve it. So that's what we've done. And with the theater ensemble, I even took it a step further, and I imbued it with my theories of ensemble, which is everybody learns everything. And so the ensemble is committed in many ways. We all know the story inside and out. And we could probably switch cast each night if we had to. That's how we've rehearsed the show, so everyone has had some kind of energy inside of all the characters. But it's huge, and I want to give a shout-out to the music ensemble. The Pedro Gomez's music is inspiring and really beautiful behind the text and the dances for the show. It just lifts everything up.
Everything
was done by youth. Everything was done by youth. So the Running Crew teachers have really let the youth design the lights and design and build the set. And we have a great group of youth. They're amazing and huge. There's so many of them. It's unbelievable.
Do you have, like, an estimate of how many youth are involved in the production?
I'm not sure. Akil, would you say? I'd say 40.
40.
Wow, that's amazing. And what are the age range? Because you're 17, so you're probably an elder, huh, Akil?
Yeah.
They go into young adults.
Yeah, there's like some college students, so like maybe 14 to 22 or something like that.
We have some people who may break the 22, too.
Okay.
There are a few people in the dance ensemble, I think, who are a little older than that.
Okay. Yeah, is there like a cap on like where local performance ensemble like goes up to a certain age, like for instance.
No, it's intergenerational.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's what I really like about it. It's intergenerational, right, Akil?
Yeah, it's great. It's really rewarding.
How old is the company? When did it start?
Oh God. How old is Soko? We should have that answer. I don't know. It's probably as old as Brava. Brava's 26 years old.
Oh, okay.
How old is Loco Bloco?
It's we're
pushing
19.
20. Yeah, I was gonna say pushing 20.
19, 20.
Well,
something.
We'll be 19 this carnival, and then the next year is our big 20.
Oh, okay. Good.
Oh, nice.
So
yeah.
Expect
okay.
something big.
Yeah.
Bigger than this? Oh, my God.
So this is pretty big. Night Wakes Dawn seems pretty big.
It is. And the play was written by a brother and sister. And Martine, who's been in rehearsal, Alma's actually been in college, like the character.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been in rehearsal. And he's fairly young, too, the writer.
Yeah, he's mm-hmm. 16.
Okay, mm-hmm. thank you. He's had soda. We have quite a few soda youth.
Mm-hmm.
And we have people from the community. I know in the theater ensemble, we had pretty open auditions. We had open, very open auditions. And we had a lot of people of all ages come. And we're intergenerational also
mm-hmm.
in the ensemble.
Nice. That's awesome.
So we have someone even who has graduated from City College with a degree in theater who's in our ensemble.
Okay. Cool. Super. Yeah.
Excuse me. I'm so sorry. I have to get off the phone because I have to get to school.
Oh, no problem.
Go to class.
I'm very sorry, but it's...
No, that's okay, Akil. We're going over a little bit. Michael, hang in there. I know you're in the studio. Yeah, my other guest is here. So thank you, Akil, so much, and look forward to seeing you this weekend.
All right, yeah, thank you so much for having me. And,
all right, see you tonight.
Honor. See ya.
You must mean rehearsals, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, you take good care. You'll have a good day at work, at school.
All right.
Bye-bye. So, Idris, why don't you give us the details one more time for people
The show runs this mm-hmm. Saturday at 7 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. at Brava. 2781 24th Street at York in the Mission, San Francisco. You can get tickets at brava.org, and tickets are $10 for students, $15 general admission.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say no one will be turned away.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And you want to say hi to Michael James Sullivan? He's in the studio now.
Hey, Michael!
Hey, how's it going?
What's up? Hey, we need to talk.
Yeah, we should talk.
We are neighbors.
Yeah, we have to find some time to get together.
Yeah, come on down. I want to talk to you about stuff.
Okay.
All right.
Thank
you, Wanda.
You're welcome.
I don't know if I would have gotten to say that to Michael in the next couple of weeks, so thanks for that, too.
Well, you know where Michael is. He's at Marin Theater Company. He's doing Holding It Down, and It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, and it got held over through the 23rd, so you could go see it because your thing will be over. Mm-hmm. It's really good.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right, y'all have fun. Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Okay, Wanda, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. I didn't even know that this was your Marin Theater Company debut. I thought I'd seen you on that stage before.
Oh, no. There was a long time where I just kind of gave up on whether or not I was going to work at Marin Theater Company. And I was like, well, they're never going to cast me, so I'll just, you know. And then they changed over, got a new artistic director, and,
mm-hmm.
and they'd been calling in a lot of people that hadn't had a chance to work there before.
Oh.
So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So in the last couple of years, they were like calling me and saying, we want to work with you. We want to do something. So
okay. Nice.
And they cast me.
Well, hey, it's you know, you know, everybody's got to have Michael Gene Sullivan, you know, as a
I wish everybody thought like that.
I mean, you are just so good as Freddie Fillmore. You are just walking to the the live radio studio and you're like talking it up with the audience and okay, like, you know, practicing songs and telling them when to clap, and then, you know, like with 20 minutes before the show starts, you all are setting up the, you know, the studio, getting your props together, you know, that you're going to be using for different sound effects. It's so like a real live radio, you know, taping with a live audience.
You know, when the guy Joe Landry, who wrote the play,
mm-hmm.
when he originally wrote it, people were like, well, you can't do It's a Wonderful Life. It's too big. There's all these characters. There's so many people. The guy runs all, because everybody's seen the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, you know, George Bailey runs all over town. You can't show all of that. And so he had to figure out a way to do it with a small cast. And he thought, well, what if we do it, instead of trying to change sets, we'll do it all in one set, do it like it's just a radio play. And so that's why we get to play all of those different roles and do all of the sound effects and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different enough from the movie so that even if people have seen the movie, they'll go, oh, you know, they'll see this and they'll have a completely different experience.
Right, right. It's so funny because when we were in the audience maybe a couple of weeks ago now, mm-hmm. I guess we were just having too much fun. So I think it was during intermission or afterwards, the lady said, is this your first time, you know, seeing this play? Or, well, of course, first time seeing the play.
Yeah.
It's never been done before. Didn't you know the story? I'm like, yeah, but I didn't know it like this.
Yeah. You know, there are so many people. One of the things that I found just bizarre is there are so many people come and say they've never seen the movie.
What?
And I'm like, do you live in this country?
Oh, my gosh.
You know, that movie plays 24 hours a day. At Christmas, and they said, no, they never saw it because they thought it was going to be all, you know, hokey and stupid, and it's just about this guy. But the thing that I really like about it is, especially for right now, because, you know, main thing I do is political theater.
Right, exactly.
And so, for me, this is a political show because it's about a small credit union fighting off this big capitalist, and how the community, the guy who runs the credit union, he's always helping people, and he sacrificed all this stuff in his life. You know, he doesn't go away to college when he wants to. He doesn't go away and travel. He sacrifices his whole life for the community. And then in the end, he thinks it didn't make any difference and that nobody cares and everybody would be better off without him. And then in the very end, he's saved by the community that he's been working for,
mm-hmm.
from the big capitalist bank that's trying to take over the credit union. So I think about, you know, all those people who are taking their money out of the big banks to put them into credit unions nowadays and
mm-hmm.
supporting community organizations. You know, so for me, it's a very political play.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I just thought about, you know, being, are you the senior writer for San Francisco Mime Troupe?
Well, I have been.
Because I know you've been writing all the plays
for
about a decade now.
Because
mm-hmm. I know before you write some of them, but now you write all of them.
Collaboration. Yeah, it's been interesting. Yeah, I've been the resident playwright for 12 years. But I'm going to take this year off.
Yeah. Oh, you are?
Oh, heck yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not going
to
be.
To do what? To do 1984 again? What? To do what?
I'm really not sure. I just, you know, I've been with the Mime Troupe for 25 years. And in that 25 years,
really?
I have taken one summer show off.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to take another show off.
Oh.
Let somebody else write, somebody else direct, other people can be in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just, you know, if worse comes to worse, I'll just sit at home with my son, you know, mm-hmm. playing video games. But I need some time off.
Oh, wow. So you're going to take 2013 off?
Yeah, off from the Mime Troupe. I'll have shows playing other places, and I'll be acting and directing other places probably.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so I'll just be taking at least a year off to just kind of recharge.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I just think you're just such a great host of the radio show. And I love the commercials. They're so funny.
Yeah. Well, that was the main part that the guy, because he's writing it as a radio play, but he knew that the audience needed some breaks. And in order to make it, like, real, you know, he wrote these commercials and he put these little jingle songs in,
mm-hmm.
you know. But he had to, so the, like, one of them is for Duck's toilet soap. And he did that because in the old days, back in the 40s and 50s, there was a radio show by the Lux Toilet Soap Company.
Mm.
So he's kind of doing a takeoff of some of them on some of the commercials. And like you said, when we started rehearsing, and they said, you know, Michael, we might ask somebody in the cast to talk to the audience before the show. Would you mind doing it? And I was like, oh, try to stop me. Because they were like, because, you know, the people, they'd seen me do mime troupe shows and do the pitch after the mime troupe show.
Okay.
So they said, they knew I was real comfortable talking to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, well, you might have to talk for a while. And I said, I could literally go out on a stage with a chair and sit down, and I would have no problem being out there for hours. Because
mm-hmm.
I've done that, where I just, you know, do question and answer, talk about how to create plays or whatever. So I was like, or politics. So I was like, that'll be the hard thing, will be shutting me up.
Yeah, and then it's just so interesting. And then you go from, and I thought it was really cool having a name like Freddie, and then Fillmore. I thought about the Fillmore District.
Yeah,
in San Francisco. Yeah, I just thought about how, you know, the props and how it's so easy for you to, like, go from one character to another. I mean, you end up being the really bad guy, you know, the one
mm-hmm.
that's trying to take over the town, and, you know, and he's sort of like the Scrooge in the other.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he just never wins.
Right.
Yeah, and you end up playing him, and then you play some women characters. And then
yeah.
the other actors are also shifting hats, and you all are taking turns, you know, doing the sound effects. And it just moves. It's got really great pacing. The direction is excellent.
Yeah, John Tracy directed the show, and he, you know, this is the first time he ever directed anything like this. Normally the stuff he directs is like dream sequences and battle scenes and, you know, God fighting monsters and stuff. And so this time it was like, okay, well, we don't do that. You know, it's mainly about the characters and getting us in the right place at the right time on the stage, because we have to talk into the microphones since it's a radio show, and also because the microphones are really live. They actually are on.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Oh.
And so the sound guy's job is to make it sound a little bit like it's a radio
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just being regular play. And like you said, one of the great things about this show for an actor is that I get to play, like, I don't even know how many people I play. I think it's 14. The artistic director keeps saying I'm playing 17 people.
Wow.
And sometimes I have one scene where I'm playing three guys talking to each other in the same scene.
Mm-hmm.
And each one just has to have a different voice,
yeah.
you know, and I have to make it clear to the audience who they are. Mm-hmm. And I have a big argument between old man Potter, who is the villain,
mm-hmm.
and who I would never get cast as Mr. Potter. If they were just going to do a regular play,
mm-hmm.
they'd go, well, we got to find another old white guy to do this role. You know, we can't cast mm-hmm. Michael. And then I get to play Uncle Billy.
Yeah, you do him really
yeah.
well.
And they have scenes together. And
mm-hmm.
so that I get to play I would never get cast as those two parts, you know. And so that I get to play all these, you know, these great characters, the old man who George Bailey works for, and the Italian guy who runs the bar, and the cab driver that's his best friend, that I get to play all of these different roles in one show
mm-hmm.
is so much fun. And, you know, the rest of the cast, everybody just, you get to do what we said was that, you know, when you're starting out as an actor, you practice all these voices at home. You know, you're always trying different things to try to do all of these different voices that you can do. But you're never going to have a chance to do them in a play, you figure.
Mm-hmm.
And then this show, we get to do a bunch of the voices that we've had. It's like an actor's dream come true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just reading about, you know, Frank Capra's film, you know, by the same title, It's a Wonderful Life, and didn't realize that it had been a flop. Isn't it interesting?
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
It was a huge flop. It was up for a couple of Academy Awards,
mm-hmm.
but it was a flop for some reason, and then it didn't become popular until cable television
mm-hmm.
came along. And they had 24 hours of television, and they had to put something on it. And so they went back, and they found, well, you know, every time they show a movie on TV, they have to pay the production company a little money.
Mm-hmm.
But It's a Wonderful Life was never copywritten. I mean, it was copywritten, but the copyright wasn't renewed.
Mm-hmm.
So they could show it without having to pay any royalties. So that's why it became a classic, was because they put it on television 24 hours a day. And so in the 60s, It's a Wonderful Life was just considered an old movie, or the 70s or 80s. It wasn't until the 90s, when it was on television 24 hours at Christmas,
mm-hmm.
that it became considered a classic. Now we just think of it as this great movie that everybody sees.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't that way for, you know, 40 years after it was made.
Right, yeah. Yeah, you're too young to I guess, come up at the time when, you know, people were sat around their radio, like people sit around their televisions. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, even when I was a kid, we didn't have, you know, now everybody has a TV in their room. But when I was a kid, we just had one in the living room, and it was a part of a console, and you could play records on the top part. And we'd all get together and watch the Ed Sullivan Show. And the, what was it, the Walt Disney, and before that, after dinner, and then we go to bed after the bubbles.
Yeah, there used to be a time, I think about, you know, kids nowadays, they never see a television station sign off. You know, when I was growing up, at midnight they go, that's it, thank you for watching, and just, you know, snow after that. So for the radio plays, you know, that used to be the thing. I know that, like, Bill Cosby used to have this bit that he did where he talked about him and his brother listening to radio plays and how scary they were. And, you know, people say, well, how scary could radio play be, or how uplifting, or how, you know. And the thing is, and I tell people in the audience, during the show, I was like, close your eyes. Go ahead and close your eyes and just see it as a radio play for a while, you know, because the pictures you make in your head are going to be better than the ones you'll see on the screen. The special effects or how things look or how things work will always be better in your imagination. Mm-hmm. And so radio plays were incredibly imaginative because, like when Bill Cosby says, the one he does a story about the chicken heart that ate Chicago, which is a real radio play. And he said in his mind it was so much more horrifying than anything he could have seen in the movies. So, you know, radio it helps people with their imagination. It helps them, you know, to have to figure things out in a way that television and movies just don't.
Yeah, it's really nice. And talk about, you know, sort of all those fun gadgets on stage. It just looks like a, you know, like a scientific, what do you call it?
I don't know, it looks like a laboratory.
Yeah, totally. And, well, and you don't know what these things do until you all do them.
Yeah, we were at one point we were going to do some demonstrations before the show, but then we realized that actually people, when we did that, it kind of took some of the magic away. Mm-hmm. But like there's things that are easy. Like at one point, George Bailey, when he's trying to think about whether or not he's going to kill himself because his life didn't make any difference, he's running through the snow. And so we have these two shoes, and they're crunching along, and what they're stepping on is cornflakes.
Oh.
Yeah, so there's a plate of cornflakes, and you take the shoes, and you run, and it goes crunch, 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 crunch. So it sounds like snow. And then there's a big bucket full of water, and when two guys jump in the river, we take a plunger and we, you know, plunge it into the bucket of water so it sounds like they're hitting the water. Or there's another part that this kid is walking across some ice and it cracks under his feet and he falls in to this pond.
Oh, yeah.
And so what we use is lasagna, uncooked lasagna is the sound of the cracking ice.
Nice.
Yeah, so there's all these little things, you know, there's a wind machine. We don't use the wind machine in the show.
Yeah, I was wondering what that big thing was.
Yeah, you know, I should tell the audience. Sometimes I tell them and sometimes I run out of time. We had this wind machine, but it's really loud. Oh. And also it's an actual antique wind machine, so it has a big clunk sound right in the middle. So we used it in rehearsal and we go, yee, clunk, yee, clunk. And we're like, well, that doesn't sound like a storm, any storm I know. So we just have somebody blows on the microphone. Sarah Overman, one of the actors, she just blew, and it sounds like wind. And so we're like, cool, works for us.
Right, yeah. I was thinking about some of my favorite parts, and then I would think, I don't know, maybe I need to see the movie again, but I was wondering, this doesn't follow the movie exactly. It seems like there's some more details in the play than are in the film. Are there?
I think that, well, one of the characters that I also play is the Archangel Joseph, who is kind of like the narrator. And so he ends up in this play, says more stuff than, you know, in the movie, things just happen. But in the play, in this play, it gets narrated. Mm-hmm. So there's one part where what I noticed was when There's a part where one of the characters, Uncle Billy, accidentally gives all this money to his enemy, Mr. Potter. He's kind of taunting Mr. Potter, and he accidentally he gives him a newspaper, and inside the newspaper is an envelope with $8,000 in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of it's a very important part of the movie, and it's an important part of the play. But
right.
When I tell the audience, sometimes when I tell the audience in the play, Uncle Billy couldn't find the money because the envelope with $8,000 in it was folded into the newspaper, the audience gasps.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, no. And I'm thinking, didn't y'all notice? Did you see the movie? But the thing is that some people say they saw the movie, but they never picked up on that.
Yeah, I don't remember that because I was gasping, too, and the people were like, why
right.
is she gasping? Doesn't she know the movie? And I'm
right,
like,
I don't remember that. Big chunks of the audience all go, you know, I never noticed that in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of stuff that it's in the movie. We
okay.
just make it clearer
right.
in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, besides the whole idea of, you know, the small business and being a real community-based business, because their business was one that allowed people to be able to own homes, so they wouldn't
yeah.
have to, you know, live in the projects that the old man Potter,
mm-hmm.
you know, so the slums that he... that most people were living in, and yeah, and so they were just doing so much. You know, they were just doing so much good, and I really liked. And I don't remember that either. Was that the protagonist's wife? You know, before she's his wife, she goes away to college. Is that something new too? Because I don't remember that either.
No, that was in there.
That was in the movie too.
Yeah, that the men and women. I mean, they're not necessarily going to the same colleges, but.
No.
Yeah, that they go away, that she's not stupid,
mm-hmm.
you know. He
yeah.
meets her in high school, and she goes away to college, along, you know,
mm-hmm.
With a bunch of other, you know, other men and women. It's just George that doesn't
yeah.
go.
Right.
That that he's sacrificing himself. And like you said, the thing with they're providing people houses in a way that we don't even think about nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's in a building and loan company, which is like I said, a credit union.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that everybody puts their money in. People in the town, they put their money in just like it's a bank or something, and then that money is used to build houses. And then the houses are sold, and then those people pay back the building and loan, and that's how that's the exchange. Nobody's making a profit is the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, the idea in this particular capitalist society is that somebody's supposed to be getting rich.
Yeah.
You know, you build a house for $50,000 and you sell it for $600,000 and you get rich. For George Bailey and Wonderful Life, and the whole idea, they're not getting rich. You're doing this because it's good for the community. You're making a living.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a house, but he's not trying to get rich off of other people. They build the houses. And when they sell them, when the people pay them off, they're not paying a huge amount of money. They're paying about what it cost.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that mentality of instead of thinking, well, how can I get ahead of everybody else? It's how can we all do better? And that's what's at war in It's a Wonderful Life is. There's Mr. Potter's side, which is somebody should get rich. Somebody should just be doing better. These people are idiots. The poor people are just stupid. And then there's George Bailey's side, which is, no, if we all work together, everybody's life will be better. And that means my life is better.
Right. Yeah. It's just really interesting. You know, even if you think you know a story, when it's told in a different way, it's a new story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so entertaining. It makes me wish that I could go to more radio plays and be in a live studio audience.
Yeah, they don't, they don't do many around here. Every once in a while, somebody will do one. Like there used to be shows like Fog City Radio and stuff like that where they would do radio plays, but they're normally really short.
Mm-hmm.
They'll do like 10 minutes or something. But it used to be, and in the Midwest, you could still see big, long ones. Well, they'll do a full movie or something like that and just a radio play version.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people have asked Marin Theater Company, they're like, are you going to do any more radio plays?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, we weren't planning on it. but maybe we will, you know.
Yeah, that'd be really nice. You know how Lorraine Hansberry Theater does their Black Nativity in different
yeah.
kind of ways. I don't think they did it this year, but, you know, for season after season, they would do it again, and you say, how many ways can you do this? And they do it a new way. It'd be really cool if Marin Theater Company, since people like the radio plays, could have another story as a radio play. That'd be, and then have, and you'd be a regular. You know, Freddie
would
Fillmore
nice.
Would be the host, no matter what the play was. That'd be really super.
Well, that would be
until you get tired of it, and then you can move on.
It's hard to get tired of being in front of the crowd. And with this show, you know, we've got one more week. And
that's
and
really exciting.
Like,
I'm so happy you all got extended. That's great.
Yeah, it is great. I mean, I'm hoping that they're going to – this might be a regular show for them. They might do it again in the future, like do make it their Christmas show. Because one of the things that's also really nice is to kind of end the year. There's so much stuff, so many things that are so terrible that happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, different tragedies and economic problems and all of that. And sometimes people just kind of dissolve, you know, they try to forget it all by just doing something that makes them feel good. It doesn't have any other meaning. They just go, well, I'm just going to be drunk from Christmas to New Year's, you know, or I'm just going to, you know, I'm just going to go away and forget it all. I'm going to go on a media fast. But then they're going to be dumped back into the real world and feel terrible. They're going to go, oh, what happened? Oh, I didn't know. It was Social Security got cut or whatever. So with a show like this, that it still has serious issues it's dealing with, but it makes you feel better as a person, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can go, yes, it deals with suicide, and it deals with poverty, and it deals with all, you know, terrible economic times and the depression and all of that, but you still feel good and hopeful at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a lot of people need that.
Because what's really wonderful about this story, you know, that, you know, Frank Capra adapted from The Greatest Gift by Philip Van Doren Stern, is that we do make a difference. We might not know how.
Right.
But take us out of the picture and you know, and you see, my goodness, I touched all those people's lives, and my goodness, if I wasn't, you know, if I was had never been born, then so many lives would not be as good as they are, even though I don't think things are that great. That's, you know, it's just really, really wonderful to sort of think about that. You know, we you know, we don't get an opportunity to have a an Archangel Joseph, you know, also known as Michael Gene Sullivan, to have us walk back through our lives. but we could do it in a, you know, we could do it sort of in our imagination when we think, you know, get kind of depressed. People get depressed at the end of the year because it's getting dark and it's freezing cold. And you can't go outside as much.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, looking at the bills that, you know, we spend all this money on presents, and or maybe, you know, some things are coming to an end and you have to move on and you don't know how to let go. And this kind of play, you know, this character, George Bailey, he, you know, sort of gives us kind of a way to work through that.
Yeah, because he's not like a traditional, like a hero who is just this wonderful, likable guy who's always optimistic. He actually spends most of the play kind of depressed, and he's always complaining about how he doesn't get to be selfish.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I want to do what I want to do, which is what people can relate to. He's like, I want to go traveling. I want to take care of myself. I don't want to get married. You know, I want to make $1 million. And then it takes him the whole play to realize that all of that stuff isn't that important. Well, you know, you having $1 million doesn't necessarily mean that all of these people aren't living in the project. You know, you getting to travel doesn't mean that the town is better off.
Mm-hmm.
It's just selfish, you know, and that he has to, it takes a whole play for him to kind of get to realize that, yeah, it's a wonderful life. He's done all of this stuff and all of these people like him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I used to, I every once in a while I teach in high schools and I teach playwriting.
Okay.
And one of the things I always try to tell the students is, you know, if, let's say, because, you know, students are always like, I'm going to be a rap star, I'm going to be a basketball player, I'm going to make $1 million. And I'm like, okay, here's the thing. Even if you get all of this money, And then, you know, what are you going to do with it? Now, I'm going to collect cars. One, you know, these students are, oh, yeah, I'm going to have all these fancy cars. I'm going to have a Maserati and a Lamborghini and, you know, 20 different Porsches. And you go, okay, here's the thing. If you are really rich and you have a car collection or you have a bunch of fancy houses, you have all of these jewels and diamonds and all of this stuff that people think has to do with being rich, when you're on your deathbed, everybody standing around that deathbed is only thinking one thing. What do I get if you die? What did he leave me? But if you're rich and you gave that money to hospitals and set up scholarship funds and help schools out and do stuff like that, the people standing around your deathbed are going to be thinking, I hope he doesn't die because he's such a nice guy or such a nice woman.
Mm-hmm.
So your actions, you got to think, what do you want people thinking? Do you want them wishing you're going to be dead so they can get one of your car collection cars? Or do you want them to wish that you live because you're so nice and so helpful and so much a part of the community?
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of what George Bailey has to realize is, you know, the wealth that he has isn't in money. Mm-hmm. It's in the friendship and love that people have for him because he's helped them, because
mm-hmm.
he's been part of the community.
Right, yeah. So he talks about in the beginning about how, you know, he wants to be a builder. He wants to design, you know, the tallest building, you know.
Yeah.
And so you think about that as a metaphor in the end,
mm-hmm.
That he has. He, you know, they're in the building. You think about the master builder, you know, Ibsen.
Yeah.
You think about those metaphors, right? It's like, So he's been building a life, you know, building his character. And it is really tall.
Yeah.
You know, at the end, you know, when he's thinking about, you know, sort of cashing it all in, you know, he's built a really magnificent skyscraper of a life for himself, but he can't see it, you know, at that point. But then when he is not recognized, because that's another thing, you know, you think like, wow, you know these people, but they don't know you because you don't exist. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
You're not invisible, but you're invisible. I mean, that whole experience, you know, as you know, your character, the angel, takes him through his life without him in it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's invisible. Nobody knows him. And he's just like, oh, my God. I mean, I was married to you. You were my mother. And nobody recognizes him.
Right. And all of the stuff that he did, that
mm-hmm.
it's all gone now.
Yeah.
Those are the kinds of things, you know, I sometimes think that one of the greatest things about being an actor is that if I do a good day's work, at the end of my day, a bunch of people applaud.
Mm.
And if it's a really good day's work, they stand up and applaud. Most
yeah.
people never get that.
Mm.
You know, you could be working at a company as an accountant somewhere, or, you know, a greeter at Walmart or wherever. And at the end of the day, you know, you could do a really good job, but you can always feel a little underappreciated. Your appreciation is supposed to be your paycheck, which your boss kind of gives you. Go, here, I don't want you in the union or anything, but here's a little tiny bit of money. And that's supposed to take the place of real appreciation
mm-hmm.
and really saying, this is the impact I have. You know, doing shows with the Mime Troupe or African American Shakes or Marin or wherever,
mm-hmm.
people can come up to me or anyone after the show and say how important that was to them, how much it meant to them. Thank you for doing this show. But, you know, like I said, some doorman or accountant or you know, a bookkeeper somewhere or, you know, a software designer or somebody who works in a liquor store, they may have done something that does impact people, but they don't get any feedback on it.
Hmm.
You know, that guy in the liquor store who is not going to give this kid beer because he knows that's a fake ID, you know. That can be an important moment, you know. All he's going to get is screamed at by the kid. Give me the damn beer, you know. But the fact that they didn't sell it to them might be the most important thing that happened to that kid. But that liquor store
mm-hmm.
cashier is never going to get any applause for that. People aren't going to come up and say, well, thank you for doing the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, they're just going to get complaints. If more people got appreciated for the stuff they did, I think that in general the world would be a better place. People wouldn't be so freaked out all the time and being angry because they'd go, I do make a difference.
Yeah, yeah. Well, even if we're not having people standing up and applauding, I think plays like It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play, you know, with you as the host, you know, Freddie Fillmore. just, you know, we can like sort of carry that applause in you know, within when we do things, and it would be nice to get applauded. It would be nice to get acknowledged for doing the right thing. But, you know, unless you know, you're an actor and yeah, you have a lot of work, you know, we're not getting applause.
Yeah, I know.
So we have to carry these moments, you know, that these moments that are so wonderful, you know, these theatrical moments with us, so that we can just reflect on that. You know, reflect on George Bailey when we're having a George Bailey moment, mm-hmm, and say, you know, it is a wonderful life, and you all just do such a wonderful job in sort of bringing this particular story to life for us on stage. I mean, it's just so fun. I saw people with their children in the audience, and everybody was smiling at intermission and beaming at the end of the play. And I know people can come early and just get in on the spirit of being, you know, on the air live and practice their clapping and their singing.
Yeah.
It's just a real fun experience, and you actually have two shows on Saturday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have a 2
yeah
o'clock and a 8 o'clock on Friday. See, so tonight's Wednesday, so you have a 7:30 tonight,
mm-hmm,
and then Thursday and Friday, Saturday, you have an 8 o'clock, and then on Saturday and Sunday, you also have a 2 p.m. matinee, so people could, like,
yeah,
if they really enjoy themselves, they could do the 2 o'clock matinee and then go back for the evening,
yeah,
show, because you're closing this weekend on the 23rd. So
yeah, and also
yeah
people should know, you know, because it's an extension week, it's,
mm-hmm,
you know, it's easier to get, like, cheaper tickets.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I
so,
didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, and also, like, last I heard on, you know, if you show up like an hour before the show without a reservation or anything, but you show up, you can get like half price tickets.
Really?
Yeah, and you can call the box office and because I think they lowered the price for the extension week.
Oh, that's
just
because
they want to get as many people as they can to see the show.
Oh, that's
and
so cool.
We've had really good audiences. I mean, this has been one of their biggest hits,
mm-hmm,
in terms just, and that's why we added all of these shows.
Okay.
But at the same time, you don't want to just, for Christmas, you don't want to just add a bunch of shows and then have people not be able to afford to see it anyway.
Right, yeah.
So.
Oh, that's super. Yeah, it says that there are discounts for seniors and those under 30, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so people should visit Marin Theater, theater spelled with RE.org, or you can call the box office at 415-388-5208. And the Marin Theater Company is located at 397 Miller Avenue in Mill Valley, and it's across the street from the smaller Whole Foods in Mill
yeah
Valley.
Yeah, and it's not that, you know, it's not far away. To, you know, I drive up there every night to do the show. It's like 20 minutes from where
oh,
I live.
Yeah. Oh,
and I'm
yeah
in the middle of San Francisco, so
mm-hmm
I always think of it as really far away, but it's really close.
No, it's not that far, and I'm coming from the East Bay when I visit, and it's, you know, you stack on an extra 20 minutes, so it's like, you know, 40, and the traffic moves
yeah
generally, and it's easy. I mean, you just, and it's beautiful. You cross the Richmond Bridge, and
mm-hmm
you can see that beautiful view, and then you pass by the prison, which is not that beautiful.
Yeah, really.
And then you go over, you know, Highway 101, and like you're going to San Francisco, and then before you look up, there is the exit from Mill
mm-hmm
Valley. Yeah, it's really, really wonderful. And as I said, it's just always great to see you on stage. And congratulations on your Marin Theater Company debut
oh
with
thanks
It's a Wonderful Life as the host of the show, which is so cool. It's like, oh, this is such a natural for Michael. I know they couldn't think of anybody else for that role but you.
Well, we'll see when they decide to do it again. If they go, we got to get Michael. If they go, there's some other people we should give a chance.
Oh, heck no.
But we'll see.
Well, thank you again so much, Michael. It's always a pleasure. And have a wonderful 2013 off, just
thank
doing
you
what you want to do as a creative artist and person that you are. And looking forward to seeing what that means in new work. And then, you know, continuing into 2014. Oh, and have a great new beginning and winter solstice.
Thanks. You too.
All right. You take good care.
All right. Bye-bye, Wanda.
Bye. Peace and blessings. So we are going to play Voluspa, because we didn't get a chance to play all of it. And again, the two-part program starts tonight, Wednesday, December 19th, 7:30, and at Dance Mission Theater. I think it's going to start outside, and then it's going to continue through December 20th through December 21st. And there's some other things that are going to be happening on December 21st, and I'll tell you about that after we play this song. So that is the song from Voluspa, A Ghost Dance for 2012. And again, that's a Dance Brigade production. Tonight, Wednesday, December 19th, 7:30 p.m. And continuing Thursday, December 20th, 7:30 p.m. into the next day. It's going to go to about 12:30 in the morning to mark the December 21st winter solstice and end of the Mayan calendar. It's going to be a great community ritual, as only Dance Brigade can do. And I also want to let you know about another community ritual that's going to be on this Thursday, December 20th, 7 to 9 p.m. at the John F. Kennedy University Arts and Consciousness Building. Louisa Teach is hosting A Day Before the New Beginning, a ritual celebration of the Mayan calendar with Louisa Teach. And that's going to be 7 to 9. The JFK University Arts and Consciousness Building is located at 2956 San Pablo Avenue, second floor in Berkeley, California, corner of Ashby and San Pablo Avenue, sort of around the Orchard Supply place. And you can park over there, too. And it's open to women, men, and children. You should bring a 2013 calendar. Adults are $20 to $12 sliding scale. Children under 12 are free, but no one is turned away. For information, you can contact Louisa Teach at dahomeyroyal@gmail.com, DAHOMEYROYAL, or you can visit her website, Louisa Teach, LUISAHTEISH.com, and it's a drug, alcohol, and hate-free zone that all of her events stipulate. And we're going to close with another piece. It's called Village of the Virgins, and it's a Duke Ellington piece interpreted by Vijay Iyer, the wonderful, wonderful composer and pianist. And this is from his latest CD, or at least it was latest when I when I spoke to him. And and don't forget Local Bloco and Brava for Women in the Arts is presenting Night Wakes Dawn. And that's a celebration of the it's actually a theatrical exploration of the beliefs and prophecies initiated by the Mayan culture surrounding December 21st and questioning of the New Age controversy over its meaning. So that should be really great. And that's going to be Saturday, December 22nd at 7 o'clock and Sunday, December 23rd at 2 o'clock. Oh, and I want to also mention that I was noticing that there's going to be a really wonderful play about Harriet Tubman this weekend. And let me find those details. Taiwo Kujichagulia is her theater company is doing this piece, and it looks really interesting. It's called Go Tell It, and it's a original musical, and it's a musical journey with Harriet Tubman and her family along the Underground Railroad, and we're going to see how the spirituals help guide the way. And it was created by Taiwo Kujichagulia Sietu, and that's Friday, December 22nd, and Saturday, December 22nd, Friday, December 21st, and Saturday, December 22nd at 7 o'clock. And that's at Kids and Dance, and that's 3814 MacArthur Boulevard at 38th Avenue. And it's 15 in advance and 20 by the door. And you can visit Go Tell It, Go, and then Tell, and then It, .eventbrite.com, and to find out more about it. And you can also visit their website, and that sounds really fun. And it's narrated by the playwright's mother, Griot Fabia Kujichagulia, and it features a cast of singers and dancers and drummers. Wow, sounds really great. The choir includes Marilyn Reynolds, Brenda Savage, Andrea Turner, oh my goodness, Thomas McKinney, Alice and Harriet Bagwell, and Pat Jameson and Whaley from Wakanda Mwetu Choir. It's going to be hot. Along with Taiwo and Kahinde Kujishakalia CA2, the two sisters, Nayeta Bird, Six, and Dan. Oh, that's going to be nice. So that's this weekend as well. So there's a whole lot of wonderful things happening as we make our transition from fall into the winter season. And then the following week we have Kwanzaa starts. So here is the Village of the Virgins, Duke Ellington, as interpreted by V.J. Iyer. And I might play something tomorrow on the 20th, but I'm not certain, so just stay tuned. And we're going to have an earlier show on Friday the 21st because I'm going to go visit our sisters in, at Chowchilla State Prison. I'm going to go visit the sisters at at the women's facility, and then the one that was Valley State is now co-ed because they're moving the women out. So we're going to spend the solstice with our sisters, and that's going to be a really wonderful, wonderful time for us all to connect as we move into the new year. ¶¶